One of the biggest sporting events in the world kicked off yesterday. The World Cup.
The 2022 FIFA World Cup. And the opening match between Qatar and Ecuador is underway.
There's been a lot of chatter leading up to this tournament. But unlike in previous years, the spotlight hasn't been on the national rivalries or who's going to be the star player. It's about who's hosting it. Qatar.
The most surprising thing about this year's World Cup is that it's happening in Qatar at all.
That's our colleague Joshua Robinson, who covers European sports.
There's never been a World Cup like this before. From the controversy that's circled around Qatar for the past 12 years to the very fact that Qatar is a country roughly the size of Connecticut, hosting the world's largest sporting event. Even the Qatari soccer team has never been to a World Cup before.
When Qatar first won its bid to host the event, which brings in millions of visitors from around the world, it didn't have nearly enough stadiums or hotels. And on top of that, the country is ruled by an authoritarian regime that outlaws homosexuality and tightly regulates alcohol. So, in a tournament that's supposed to be all about the sport, the location is threatening to overshadow everything else. Welcome to The Journal, our show about money, business, and power. I'm Ryan Knutson. It's Monday, November 21st. Coming up on the show, the unlikely story of Qatar's path to this year's World Cup.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/journal. Terms and conditions apply.
There were a lot of countries that wanted to host the 2022 World Cup.
Shall I recall the candidates? Australia, Japan, Korea.
That's the head of FIFA in 2010, who was on stage and about to announce the winning bid.
The winner to organize the 2022 FIFA World Cup is Qatar.
A member of the Qatari ruling family walked up to the podium to accept the honor.
Thank you for giving Qatar a chance. And we will not let you down. You will be proud of us. You will be proud of the Middle East. And I promise you this.
The world is stunned that Qatar is going to host the World Cup.
You've been to Qatar. Can you tell me what it's like in this country?
Qatar, as you fly in or drive in, looks a lot like Las Vegas. It's in the middle of the desert. You suddenly see all these towers and lights pop out. And when you drive around Qatar now, it looks like the California highway system. You know, six-lane highways as far as the eye can see, looping around. It's a city that's full of malls and strip malls. It really could pass for certain parts of the United States at times. Everything is new. You feel that this is a very young country that has come into a lot of money in recent decades.
Qatar has developed at a lightning pace. The country has only been independent since 1971.
Qatar spent much of the 20th century as a British protectorate, and then in the early 70s gained independence. But around that time, you know, it was a nation mainly of nomadic tribes and pearl divers. After the British left, it made a huge investment in extracting natural gas at a time when much of the rest of the Gulf was focused on oil. But natural gas proved to be an extremely clever bet. And so over the following decades, that money started to flow in, and it really enmeshed itself in relationships with a lot of Western powers. The U.S. is an army base there. So it grew in influence that way, and sports became a huge priority for continuing to put the Qatari name out in the world.
Over the past few decades, Qatar has tried its hand at hosting sporting events, some small, some regional, like the 2006 Asian Games. And then they set their sights on something much bigger, the 2022 World Cup.
No country as small as Qatar had ever bid to host the World Cup.
So not only even not, hadn't even hosted, but not even bid.
No, because, you know, you look at the places the World Cup had been before this, you know, before 2010, we're talking about Germany, a joint bid from Japan and South Korea, France, the United States, Italy. Those are both larger countries and countries with a deeper soccer history. And I'm including the U.S. in this because even its modest soccer history is longer than Qatar's. The World Cup is a summer tournament, usually held across a massive country with existing stadiums.
In comparison, Qatar had only one stadium. And in the summers, temperatures can reach over 110 degrees Fahrenheit.
Still, it put together this bid, promising state-of-the-art stadiums that would be air-conditioned inside and out, and that would make it safe to host in the summer.
The small size of the country, the lack of stadiums, the weather, all made it surprising that Qatar won the bid. Soon after the tournament was awarded, questions began swirling. Newspaper reports published that Qatar had bought the rights to host the World Cup. No one has been charged with bribery related to the Qatar World Cup, but
many of the 25 or so FIFA voters who were involved in the vote to give it to Qatar have since been disgraced. Several are in jail for unrelated bribery scandals, but their ethics have come into question a lot.
In recent years, the U.S. Justice Department has agreed that there had been some bribery involved in awarding the bid. A two-year inquiry by FIFA's ethics committee didn't find any impropriety around the vote. Controversy or not, Qatar would be hosting the games in 2022. And so after they won, FIFA and Qatar set about trying to get ready. First was dealing with those brutal Qatari summers.
Everyone is talking about it's unsafe for the players, it's unsafe for fans. I don't know what we're going to do. FIFA comes up with a solution. All of a sudden, they propose, we're just going to move the World Cup, not away from Qatar, but away from the summer. So they bump it into November, and this is a process that took years. They bump it out of the summer and into the winter, and that creates chaos on the international soccer calendar, because, of course, that's the middle of all the most prestigious European seasons. So to be able to do that, you have to just stop the season halfway through and say, we're off for 5 weeks, it's the World Cup.
Even though the World Cup would be held in November, temperatures in Qatar can still hit 90 degrees. To address that, the country would still need to build state-of-the-art air-conditioned stadiums completely from scratch. This would be expensive, but for Qatar, money wasn't the problem.
Of course, Qatar basically was able to write blank checks for all of this. But there's one huge caveat here, and the problem was who was building these stadiums. Qatar, like other countries in the Gulf, for a very long time relied on migrant labor from mainly Nepal, India, Bangladesh, and Pakistan. Laborers often live in squalor, they are underpaid, they work in the heat, and they died in very large numbers due to problems that they encountered on the construction sites. The exact numbers are disputed, but human rights organizations believe they range into the hundreds, if not thousands.
For years, people have been protesting the labor conditions that went into the construction of Qatar's World Cup stadiums. Organizations like Amnesty International and others have urged Qatar to compensate families of migrant workers who were killed or injured on World Cup projects.
Even the past few weekends in Germany, fans have been still saying, boycott Qatar. And even players, while no team has said, we're not going to go, players are now saying, we want to see some sort of compensation for the families of migrant workers who died or were injured building these stadiums.
How has Qatar responded to this criticism?
Qatar has made progress in recent years on the labor front. And now some of the powerful trade unions who were their most vocal critics have said, yes, the progress is clear. That doesn't change the fact that many, many people died on these construction sites, which is completely unacceptable. But they dismantled the system, which was often abusive, of sponsoring migrant workers to come to the country. They imposed a minimum wage, which had not been in place before.
Finally, Qatar had the World Cup. It had the stadiums. And after 10 years of preparation, Qatar has promised the most hospitable World Cup ever. But can they deliver? That's after the break.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/journal. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
Fans have been pouring into Qatar this past weekend, and more are on the way. The country is expecting 2 million visitors, and this in a country with a population of only around 3 million.
It's something that this country has never experienced and that no amount of spending can prepare you for. There are a lot of new hotel rooms, but some people will also be sleeping in hotels that are made up of tents or shipping containers. They've made a lot of ad hoc accommodations like this. But they're also encouraging people to stay in Dubai or Abu Dhabi or Saudi Arabia and fly in on shuttle flights, just commuting for the games.
Wow, commuting by plane to go to a soccer game.
The same way you would take the subway in any European city to go to the game, here you would take a flight.
So airlines are also just setting up these shuttle flights? I mean, they're just changing their flight patterns for this tournament?
Absolutely. That's exactly what the airlines are doing. And because the airlines are state entities, when you go to an authoritarian nation like Qatar and their neighbors are also authoritarian nations like the UAE or like Saudi, you can kind of do these things because you have state airlines that you can just adjust as needed and marshal every resource in the country to make sure that this thing works.
I mean, those logistics sound incredibly complicated.
They are.
Qatar has done a number of things to try and handle the volume of people coming in. One dramatic measure
is closing the borders to anyone who's not accredited or has a ticket.
Really? So no tourists can get into Qatar unless they have a ticket to a game?
If you're going to games, you apply for an entry permit and you can bring up to 3 relatives or friends with you. But unless someone has a ticket and is attending games, you cannot get into the country.
Something else that's different about this year's World Cup, the beer. Alcohol is highly regulated in Qatar. Booze is normally really expensive and hard to find. At first, the country said it would ease those rules for spectators, with pop-up tents outside the stadiums and special zones for visitors throughout the country where they could buy beer.
But the amount you'll be able to buy is strictly controlled. They will take a dim view of anyone who's been overserved and who is acting drunk in the street. They've created special zones for people to dry out. But it won't be the case that you can drink inside the stadium.
But then, just 2 days before the tournament began...
Right, well, I'll bring you some breaking news now from the FIFA Men's World Cup. FIFA says that fans will not be allowed to buy alcohol around World Cup stadiums in Doha. Let's speak to us.
The organizers in Qatar changed their minds and took away the pop-up tents outside the stadiums. How are the fans you spoke to feeling about all this?
I think a lot of fans are quite wary. A lot of fans have stayed away. I think, as I said, fans are quite nervous about what they're going to find there. They don't know what the accommodations are going to look like. They don't know how they're going to move around. And I think this is a massive unknown for a lot of fans. So people are going, and they've made their plans, but no one knows quite what to expect.
Qatar also outlaws homosexuality. How is that factoring into these games?
This has been one of the major flashpoints of the World Cup. Qatar is a conservative Muslim country where homosexuality is illegal. And there's been a lot of talk over in recent years about from gay rights groups saying, can you guarantee that gay fans will be safe, that members of the LGBTQ community will be able to come to Qatar and enjoy the games without being persecuted? Qatar has repeatedly said, yes, everyone is welcome. This is a world event. But please be mindful of the cultural differences. So several European teams actually had plans to wear armbands with the words One Love and a rainbow design on them as a kind of show of support to the LGBTQ community. But yesterday, FIFA got back to them and said that if the captains wore those armbands, they would be subject to an automatic yellow card, which puts them one step closer to being sent off. And so that's the kind of sporting risk that teams decided they didn't want to take. And England and Wales were the first to say that they'd abandoned those plans to wear the armband and played with FIFA-issued ones instead.
If Qatar is able to pull off this World Cup smoothly, what is that going to mean for the country?
I think the country bid thinking this would be a great advertisement for the country. I don't think they bargained for the decade of controversy that came with it. But I think partially what they're hoping for is that eventually the soccer overtakes everything else. And ultimately, Qatar is kind of normalized to a lot of people.
And what will it mean for Qatar if it goes badly?
If it goes badly, then it will only confirm the fears that a lot of people have had for 12 years. And that maybe it will be a bet that hasn't paid off.
That's all for today, Monday, November 21st. The Journal is a co-production of Gimlet and The Wall Street Journal. Additional reporting in this episode by Rory Jones and Stephen Kalin. And congratulations to Corey, Yana, Andrew, and Cortland for sending us the closest answers to our Taylor Swift Easter egg hunt from Friday's episode. And thanks to all the listeners who played along. We hope you had as much fun listening to it as we had making it. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.